Wiley Publishing, in association with Imagine That Studios and Binary Studios, presents.
Do a podcast?
Do you want to do a podcast, Serena?
Okay.
Okay.
Podcasting for Dummies, the companion podcast. Going above and beyond, Podcasting for Dummies, with your hosts, T. Morris and Chuck Tomasi.
It's that time again. It is Podcasting for Dummies, the companion podcast. This is episode 8. We are going to be talking about building your podcast digital workstation. My name is Chuck Tomasi, and I am the second listed co-author on the cover of the book.
You really got a bee in your bonnet about that, don't you, Tomasi?
I'm going to milk this thing. The man at the top of the marquee is, of course, none other than...
Bosoms, I'm your queen. My name is T. Morris. How you doing, everybody?
Oh man, I'm never gonna be able to watch The Crown again.
No, you want to be able to not watch The Crown again. The woman who is playing the queen, yeah. Queen Elizabeth. I'm blanking on the actress's name right now. She was in the movie Hot Fuzz.
Okay.
With Simon Pegg and Nick Frost. She is the bawdy female cop, the only female cop in the small town that Simon Pegg comes in. She's making lewd comments and doing this skittering laughter.
I want to go and see that.
We were watching a YouTube video, me and my better half, Pip Ballantyne, and we were watching her in one of the clips, and we're like, oh my God, it's Queen Elizabeth, and we lost it. The amount of talent that is, I realize, for those of you listening to the Podcasting for Dummies companion podcast, this has nothing to do with podcasting, but bear with us because it's Hot Fuzz, one of the greatest movies ever made. But the level of talent that is in Hot Fuzz is mind boggling. I mean, you've got the guy that plays Filch who's in this movie. You've got all these fantastic character actors from all the Harry Potter films. You've got actor who played Belloc in Raiders of the Lost Ark. He's in this movie as a priest, and he has some of the best one-liners near the end. And then, of course, on top of all that, if you've ever watched any Jerry Bruckheimer, Michael Bay cop movies, this movie, Hot Fuzz, basically makes fun of all of them, right down to the different cuts, the way they shoot the scenes. And it's just, the more you dive into Hot Fuzz, the better of a film it is. It's just it is a fantastic, yeah. The legendary shame gif, which is often used. Yes, exactly. Shame. I mean, and there's so much like foreshadowing. Have you ever jumped up in the air and fired you both guns at the same time? No, I've never done that. And then sure enough, later in the film, pub, and then boom, they're coming in. I mean, it's such a great film. It's the Bad Boys sequel that never was made that should have been. And I look, if you're like me and you're a fan of Midsummer Murders, the movie Hot Fuzz is even freaking funnier. I'm just saying. Okay, I think.
And
I'm
if you ever get T. Morris on your podcast, be prepared; he can take things in a different direction. I just mentioned The Crown.
All right, what were we talking about? Oh yeah, digital workstations. That's what we were talking about.
Someone's gonna have to edit this, and I'll tell you how.
Don't you touch that? That's like comment. That's like podcasting gold content right there, buddy.
People are gonna go, why would I want to start a podcast now? Because I can do better than that. All right. You guys aren't talking about anything.
Just can't do it for the dummies, people. That's our job. Anyway, we are here to talk about digital workstations for audio. Basically, what you need to do audio work, audio editing for your podcast. That is the main thing. Because now we talked about editing just in a moment. And Chuck is like, well, I got to edit all this out. But the thing is, unlike traditional audio editing where you had the, you know, cuts and you used tape and you did all that. And yes, I'm old enough that I have done that. I did reel to reel editing once upon a time back in the day.
You wonder where the terms cut and paste come from.
There it is.
Well, it's actually from print layout, but we won't talk about that.
That too. No, that too. But the thing is, with, you know, with similar to video and similar to editing for text and editing for design layout jobs, audio is no different. We now work in what is called non-linear editing. And that means instead of when you originally edited audio, you start at the beginning and you went to the end and that was it. And if you had to add something or wanted to take something out, you had to go back to that point and then re-edit everything from that forward point. And it can get very time consuming. But when you go digital, it suddenly becomes a much smoother, easier, and manageable process, the process of editing.
You mentioned that. I have something I've noticed, and I've been doing it forever, but I just recently noticed this.
Right.
As part of the workflow, when I edit something, I do edit generally linearly. Because if you cut something out or try to add something in, if you're going listening to it right to left, let's say I start at time zero on this 30-minute podcast.
Right.
And I'm listening to it, and I go, oh, wait a minute. Let's take something out there. You know, there's... T restarted a sentence, so we'll chop that out and move it in. Sure. Close up that gap, keep going, find something else, close it out. If you tried doing that, well, it'd be difficult to listen to something and comprehend it in reverse order. But if you tried just jumping into the middle and taking it out, depending on the software, if you move something at a lower time, let's say you took something out at 5 minutes and then you went back to 2 minutes and said, oh, I've got to take something out there, it may open up a gap at that cut at 5 minutes. So you exactly. could find yourself with gaps and overlaps and things. So generally you do move in sequence of time, but you don't have to. Or there's been podcasts that I've been editing where I take something and go, you know what? That question really belongs before this question. You can right. shift them around. And you know what? If it's an interview style and I'm asking a question and you give an answer and I'm asking a question, no one's going to know as long as the flow of the conversation still holds.
And that is what you would call ethical editing, where you edit, like you would never edit someone's answer to be something other than like what they intended.
Right.
Like if they would say, well, I'm more of a Star Trek person than a Star Wars person. And then later on, you said, you know what? I'm going to edit Star Trek and Star Wars and switch places with it so that I have them saying they're Star Trek person. And then... You know, that's what you would call an ethical edit.
We just had a discussion interestingly enough, we just had this discussion in our group this past week at work, because I interviewed someone who's known for being a little toxic, we'll say.
Okay.
Not always a
okay.
positive opinion.
Right.
And there were a couple of answers that were along that line of, yeah, but, you know, and it was starting to go down there. I came back with a retort that answered why we do things that way that he doesn't like.
Okay.
And there was a discussion. I said, now I could whitewash this thing and edit out those somewhat negative answers, but I thought that would be defeating the purpose of him having an opinion. He'd go, what happened to my opinions? You know,
exactly.
I came on your show to say, you know, you asked me to say what I wanted to say. So if the whole show were that way and it was just, you know, a grouchy Gus, I wouldn't have even aired it. I would have thrown it out
sure.
and gone, let's talk to
right.
somebody else.
But sometimes that is an option.
It
sometimes
was a few minutes out of a 35, 40 minute conversation. And it was very conversational. And after listening to it, my coworkers went, yeah, leave it in. I mean, everybody deserves to express their opinion, but you get close to that ethical line and go, you know, if I change what they say or take out what I don't want them to hear, sometimes gets to that opinion where you read something in a magazine, go, that's, you guys totally changed around my storyline and took sound bites out of what I said. And that changed the entire context of what this thing is about. And I didn't want to do that.
And that is not the kind of editing that we're talking about.
Right.
The kind of editing we're talking about is making sure that the guests or your own voice is reflected in the way and in the opinions and in the direction that you want to make sure that the conversation
generally would be cleaning up. If we're just right. having this conversation and we're cleaning things up and go, oh, wait a minute. Hey, T, we need to redo that section. You can copy and paste things out. There's another more sophisticated level. I don't know if we're going to get if it has a term, but that would be where you're putting together something of a higher production quality where maybe we're doing an audio drama and we need sound effects and three voices that were recorded independently and you're mixing them all together in multi-tracks on your editing software. You obviously have to edit that and sure. align things, time them right.
And when you're doing that type of editing, yes, you are going to work from beginning to end. That's the same way with video as well.
Yeah.
You start at the beginning, you go all the way through, you end it, and you're good. Now, where nonlinear comes into play is this, and I'll put it in a video editing term because it would also apply for audio editing as well. There was a short video that I made about my one season at the Maryland Renaissance Festival, and I had the video, and it was done on a linear editing system. And a linear editing system would be two recorders, two VCRs, and one in the middle that was the master VCR. So I would have source A, source B, and then the output.
Mm-hmm.
So I went back to the guy that helped me with the studio, the nonlinear stuff, and I had like about five videotapes worth brand new footage. And I said, "Is there any way I can put this in there?" And he said, "Yeah." And I said, "Why the hesitation?" He says, "Well, then we have to re-edit the whole thing all over again." I said, "What do you mean all over?" And this is where linear editing play. Whereas with linear editing, what happens is you go to the point where you want to stick in the new footage. You stop there, you stick in the new footage, and then you have to go back to the original footage, drop all that back in. So that's where, it's like starting the project all over again. And especially if you've got transitions where if you're doing crossfades, you've got to have the original footage to pull from. Well, with nonlinear editing, what happens is I've got this footage. I want to put it into the project. And you go, okay. So then you go to the footage that is currently in your computer. You go stick it in there. Everything shifts over.
Yep.
You're done. Now, if you've got stuff that's timed to music, you might have to reshuffle that around. You might have to tweak this, do that, all that stuff. It's fine, but that is the difference between linear versus nonlinear. You are going to take your project, listen all the way through it, but then you'll have the ability, since you're working in a digital audio workstation, to literally just instead of having to splice everything together like they did back in olden times. You can literally take out a section of audio, put it in a new section, and then everything else falls back into place. And then you fix, finesse, do what you need to do to make everything sound seamless.
So here's a tip to helping it make sound seamless. I know everybody has encountered something where you're listening to the audio and suddenly it takes a shift in level or tonal quality or something. That is... You can tell that was recorded at a different time, maybe even by a different person. I was listening to a training video, and every time they pronounced the letters ITIL, which would normally in the IT industry is pronounced ITIL, it was a different quality. Like somebody came back later and said, "It's not ITIL. You said ITIL through this whole video. We need to go patch that back in." And you could tell it was recorded on a different microphone in a different location. Something was different where all of a sudden, idle. You know, you could tell. So here's a tip.
And I was
just doing this last week while I was editing some videos, and I recorded the entire audio track in front of the camera, knowing that I wasn't going to be in front of the camera because I'd have the demo layer on screen most of the time, but I still needed the audio to be contiguous. So I wasn't going to say, here's a part where I do video, here's a part where I don't do video. I just said, screw it. I'm going to read the whole thing while I'm looking at the camera, go through it. It'll be nice and contiguous. And then later I went, oh, I'm missing a section, or, oh, I said that entirely wrong, or, oh, that doesn't make sense. What you can do to minimize that is get the same equipment in the same configuration. I realized this 2 weeks after I recorded the original one. Hopefully you don't have a cold or something that will change your voice dramatically. But play the original footage in your ear. Say, as like mimicking, almost like you're trying to imitate yourself. because right. you may have a different mental state where I'm really kind of down today. Well, if your original, you know, recording was pretty passionate and then you hit this flat spot and then it comes back and that's not the same. Right. So
Audio gymnastics. Yeah.
I go through and I listen and I say, how did I present this? Was it flat? Was it impassioned? Was it, you know, was I high? Was I low? Was I on? Was I off? Was I fast? Was I slow? What did it sound like originally? And what should it sound like today? You know, if you have the original footage to listen to. And we're talking audio here, but I was always doing video too. All I needed was the audio, so I dumped that in and said, fine, that's good. Try and get that on the same equipment. Listen to your old self and how you presented the first time so that you can patch that in. And you know, nothing's ever exact, but that really helped smooth that out. And then you watch the audio levels too. When you were looking at the waveforms on your editing software, keep them as close to possible. So just a little bit of tips from experience on how to patch in things, because oftentimes, especially when I'm dealing with other teams, who the script writers and the video editors, they're going to go, we need an audio patch. And I just groan every time they say that.
You'll, if you don't hear it as an audio patch, you'll hear it as what is called an audio pickup.
Yeah.
Audio pickup is the industry term you might hear, where that's where you basically come in and you record little flubs, you record over mistakes in the audio if you're doing this. And this is where podcasting, depending on who you talk to, some people don't think podcasts need edit. Some people think, just throw it out there raw, throw it out there, pasión. And I'm like, yeah, that's great. But here's the thing. You want it to sound, especially if you're doing it for a business or if you're doing it for a corporation, you want it to sound professional. And it's great having all this great professional gear, but if it doesn't sound professional, if it doesn't have professional polish to it, then you might as well be better off just using the onboard mic of your. That being said, there are different types of software that's out there that's going to help you accomplish this. And we cover, I would say, the big four that are out there. And they all have this, they all do the same thing. It's the steps on how to edit in these various software packages that you kind of have to figure out, and you've got to find the work best for you. The one we all start with is probably the one that we have seen evolve over the years. We've seen it evolve in the past 15 years, and it's gotten a lot more, for the lack of a better word, trustworthy.
Yeah.
Because I know so many podcasters who lost like valuable shows because this thing took a header in the middle of recording. Some of the products that you pay for, most of the time they will be storing that audio somewhere. But there have been times where this particular piece of software, in the early days, it was kind of a roll of the dice. But Audacity has really become the best, I would say, the best entry level software you can get into.
I agree.
Because it does not cost a thing.
It doesn't cost a thing. I think it was some of those earlier podcasters' experiences that drove me to do record on some other device and edit in Audacity. I have never trusted Audacity until like the last five or so years, going, all right, this is pretty good. Our church does, we record all of the services in Audacity and then burn them right. to CD to give them to the shut-ins. So it has gotten more reliable. I also like the fact that it's kept up with technologies like horizontal scrolling. I can use my trackpad to scroll through. Like, oh, that is so nice. When you have that on other applications and you don't on some, it really becomes a liability. Like, oh, I got to go down to the scroll bar and move the timeline over. That's annoying. But I still use Audacity as my primary audio editor. I started out, we were both Mac users. I started out with GarageBand and I loved it. It had a little bit of, its own quirks to it. But I found that, you know, once I got my head around Audacity, which took a whole 30 minutes, it does what I need it to very effectively. I don't need a lot of advanced things. You know, I fade in, I fade out, I copy, I paste, I align things on multi-tracks, I mix to a single track, boom, done. Yeah,
The nice thing about Audacity is that the interface itself has not changed dramatically over the years.
Right.
In fact, if anything has really changed about Audacity, it was finally established that they turned it into a proper URL. You can go to audacityteam.org and get a copy of Audacity. And the reason why we're chuckling about this is that if you went to audacity.com, you would get a janitorial service in Seattle, Washington. And they would say, "We are not the people that make software. You need to go here." And for many years, they had this like super long, complicated URL.
SourceForge.something. Yeah.
SourceForge.something/something/something/something audacity.html. I'm like, come on, guys. And they finally invested into audacityteam.org. That is the official website. And
as of 2020, we can't make predictions for the future.
2020, it may change. Now, the first big question that we tend to get when it comes to Audacity is, why is it free? What is this strange thing that I'm getting really good, something good, but it's free? I don't trust it. Okay. It is what is called open source software. In fact, it was the very first. No, I take that back. It was the second piece of open source software that I actually got to know. The first one was WordPress. So if you're working with WordPress, then you know what open source software is. And thank you, Bon Bon, for the host. I certainly do appreciate it. Very kind of you. Open source software basically means, yeah, open source, baby. Exactly. Open source software basically means it is free to the public. It is also open to the public to develop in ways that a supervisory team can look at and go, oh, this is a suggestion from this user. This is a suggestion from this user.
Yep.
This is a suggestion from this user. They test them, and if they pass the litmus test for it doesn't conflict with anything, there's no malware, everything is safe, they then turn around and they go, all right, we're going to go on ahead and make this a feature. So it's truly software that is designed and maintained by the community. And for a long time, there have been people that have been very cagey, very, very mistrustful. They've either misunderstood open source software, or they're just very gun shy about using it because they're just worried that there's something that they don't know about it, and it can be malware adjacent, have you. But as Froy and I can attest, to give you an idea of the journey of the open source community movement, there is now as a quick tangent, just to explain what open source is, there is an initiative that is still active this day in Washington, D.C. Froy and I have had the distinct pleasure of working on it. It was something that was developed by Obama's then senior tech advisor, Alvin Salehi, and it's called code.gov. And if you go to code.gov, you will discover well over probably at this point, 7,000 plus projects that are all open source, that are all running by the federal government. And they have taken all of these projects and turned them over to the American people because we use your your tax dollars to develop the software. Here it is for free. And the software that is available, absolutely mind-blowing. You could actually download, if you wanted to, you could download the same software they use at Mission Control at NASA. And you could make your own, something with it. I mean, it was a real pleasure working for them. And I learned more about not just open source software, but the open source community. And that is why I think Audacity has been the champion that it's been for podcasts. It's not just that it's open source, and it's not just that it's reliable, but it's also that it's actually a testament that reflects everything that people do with podcasts. It's do-it-yourself media creation. Well, that's what Audacity is. Audacity is do-it-yourself audio editing. Yeah. And it's a fantastic piece of software.
And I also like the fact that it's cross-platform. Unix, Mac, Linux. All right, you try that again. Windows, Mac, Linux. Hey, at least I was listening to myself. Most of the time I talk, I don't listen to myself.
But you're right. It covers all the platforms.
All three.
It's available.
So, yeah, I can go, like I said, to my church. I don't use a Windows machine hardly, but once a month, maybe once a week, and it's theirs. Right. But I don't have to learn a new software package. I can jump right in. I know what the key is. Might have to tweak the keystrokes because where's my command key? It's control or alt on this one. So it's effectively the same thing. The icons are in the same place. The menu options are in the same place, as long as you're on the same version, of course. But it works like it should, and you minimize that learning curve. Want to take another package?
Go for it.
Next one. Yeah, we're both Mac users, so you know we've got our experience with GarageBand, or as T likes to say, GarageBand. As he inherited from his Kiwi wife. Either way is fine with me. It's still the same software. I started out on this because I didn't know Audacity at the time in 2004. I went, hey, you know, when you're looking around for what do you got to make a podcast, if you've got a Mac, you've got the editing software all ready to go. It's not that hard to figure out. You can even put together your own music loops and, you know, build sound effects and you know, it's pretty easy to figure out. Well, at least it used to be in 2004. They've added a few features, and I look at it now and again.
But, you know, I mean, and it's still very easy to use. Yeah. The core charm that we were all attracted to with GarageBand is still there.
Yep.
It's still there. And some of the stuff they've added has been absolutely fantastic.
It is.
But, you know, I mean, to give you an idea how long I'd been using, I was actually creating back in the day. I was creating with GarageBand enhanced podcasts. I don't know if you remember.
Oh, those yes. Where you can put in chapters
and you can put in images that the show art would change on your iPod. Oh my God, that was back. Wow, that really dates me. But
speaking of chapters, we're going to have to at some point get into how YouTube is using that now. I don't know if that's a new feature or I just have been really unobservant lately, but we'll talk about that at some point.
No, we should. We definitely should. But as far as GarageBand goes, you know, I remember that I was trying to avoid, throwback to an earlier show we did about this. I was trying to avoid any DMCAs, any DMCA takedowns, anything like that. So I actually spent before I really got into podcasting Moravi, the very first podcast I ever did, I did that whole thing on GarageBand. And I actually created like four or five themes, and I composed them all in GarageBand. I just used loops. I did variants on the loops. I had one loop in guitar, I had a piano, and I just mixed the whole thing. That took me hours to do.
It's a creativity time suck is what it is.
But it was so rewarding.
The other funny thing is when you familiarize yourself with those clips, you start hearing them elsewhere. You know, there's a TV commercial going, yeah, that's a nice GarageBand loop.
You can almost tell the people who invested into their commercial, the ones who didn't. And and again, it was a great starter software. Now, would you say it's free? It's free when you download it for, it's free when you get it with a brand new Mac. Sure. But you're still paying for the Mac.
You can use your iPad to do editing now too, which I thought was a very nice enhancement to the whole audio productivity workflow going, all right, that, you know, if I still had an iPad that was usable, I would be doing that.
Yeah, we do cover in the book later on in the book when we talk about podcasting Go, we do cover using GarageBand for the iPad.
Nice.
It's terrific on the iPad. It's a little tougher to manage the workflow because now instead of dealing with physical files, you're now using Dropbox or you're using iCloud.
Yeah.
You're trying to figure out how to, you know, where am I saving my versions, things like that. But the nice thing about GarageBand or GarageBand, whichever way you call it, is that is that it's still, even with all the different changes that they've made to it, it is still very easy to use from an editing perspective. Now, the only time it's not easy is when you're on, because they don't make it, they don't make it for Windows. But the but the other piece of software that's out there that we recommend in the book is called Cakewalk, and it was recently acquired by BandLab. So this is Cakewalk by BandLab for Windows, and it is more or less the it's the Windows equivalent of sound of GarageBand. It is the equivalent. And from what I've read about it, what I've seen it in watching it on YouTube videos and demos and that is that is very, it's very user friendly. It's also got loops. It's got plenty of stuff for people to take advantage of. And so that is a that is another reliable piece of software that you want to look at if you're a Windows user as opposed to a Mac user. I have been finding myself floating back and forth between Windows and Mac, because eventually I'm going to be replacing my desktop with something else, but it's probably going to be replaced by a Mac. But right now, for example, I'm on a PC setup, because at one time the stuff that was really essential for streaming and taking my stream to the next level, that was available only on Windows. Now it's available. We're talking literally like a month after it was available, after I picked up my first ever PC, it became available for Mac. And I'm like, well, there you go. And but the thing is, these three pieces of software, Audacity, GarageBand, Cakewalk, this is more or less beginner's level. This is beginner's level. And there's a lot to be said for beginner's level. Beginner's level is a good place to be. It's a good place to start. But the big question is, why would you want to start going into bigger budget software? And I'm gonna pose that question to my counterpart over here. Why would you want to invest in bigger budget software?
It really gets down to the capabilities, in my mind, is the bigger budget software has. I'm familiar with an earlier version. I haven't used it in a while, but an earlier version of Adobe Audition.
Right.
One of the things that came with the house, aside from the studio, was a computer with Audition on it. And right. Mr. Meninge was kind enough to use that. It was overkill for what I needed, but it had a lot of capabilities. I recall seeing some of what he would do with Audition in terms of, you know, sound analysis and crazy waveforms. And he'd say, yeah, wow, you can really see where this is coming in, and we can bring that down and set that up. And I went, that's great. First I got to figure out the mixer. Right.
and you know, when it comes to the higher end software, even the non open source software, you know, stepping away from Audacity, going to Cakewalk and GarageBand, one of the reasons why people go for the bundles that are not open source that you actually have to pay for, part of that is because there's more documentation.
And there's more support.
Right. Because the one thing that the strongest aspect of open source software is also one of its greatest weaknesses. And this was something that, just as a quick aside, I learned a little bit about, and I know Froy and I have talked about it before. I learned this when I went to an open source event in Raleigh, North Carolina, hosted by Red Hat, called All Things Open. And at All Things Open, what happened was that you actually got a chance to hear some keynotes from these people who were leading names and forward thinkers of open source. And one of them did what I thought was a very honest talk about open source and about avoiding burnout. He said, I would come home from my day job and I would get there and I would have, you know, 10 or 20 people going, where are the updates for my open source software? This is inexcusable. And he's like, you know what? I want to have a life too. Mm-hmm. And it was frustrating because it was the double-edged sword of being successful, that you had this this thing that everybody wanted to use, that everybody wanted to take advantage of. But the problem was that you couldn't keep up with the demands if there was something that was wrong or something that, they wanted to enhance with it. And pretty soon you were basically serving two masters and only one of them was paying you benefits. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And that's why a lot of people gravitate towards software that is not open source. They want to be able to, to pay the bills. And they also want to be able to, also say, well, I want to be able to have documentation that I can rely on. And that, yeah. And Freud just mentioned that he's like, nobody wants to pay or contribute to it. It's a very frustrating aspect. It's a double-edged sword of open source software. And that's why you don't see a lot of that was the one thing, boy, Freud and I could tell some stories. It was the one thing at code.gov that we had to lean on people. And yet nobody wanted us to talk about it at All Things Open, which was documentation. Okay. That's a different discussion for
another. Valid discussion. You and I have had this discussion about OBS versus Wirecast. You like Streamlabs based on OBS. I'd prefer Wirecast. I'm doing Wirecast for work and for home. I mean, started at home, but I took it to work. And I'm willing to pay that $99 a year to keep the software up to date and to be able to send them a ticket and get a response and interact with them and say, when is this going to be fixed? And send them videos and go, this is what I'm seeing. You know, go and have that engagement from a support level. Yeah, don't ask me about version 13.
So again, but one of the other things that I know I was investing in, investing in the Apple side of Audition, which is called Logic Pro X. And Logic Pro, basically the Apple equivalent of Audition. What both of these higher end pieces of software share in common with each other is that they do what all three of the previously mentioned digital workstations don't do, which is both Audition and Logic Pro, they can do multi-track recording.
That's which is where nice.
And that is, I cannot tell you how important it is. You are able to, it's one of the things I miss about having the guys in studio. When the guys are in studio for Happy Hour from the Tower, I have me on one track. I've got Brandon on another track and I've got Nick on a third track. If Brandon is not loud enough, I can boost his signal and just his signal and I can take everybody else down.
But you can do that in post. I mean, that's the important part to note.
Post.
Otherwise you have to do that live and you're constantly watching those meters to make sure
it's
that everything is
the board. Yep. It's called riding the board. And that's the thing is that the higher end software allows you to do that. The other software, sadly, does not. But when you say, okay, I've got multiple guests in here, and instead of riding the board, I want to have the ability of fixing this in post. You can do that.
You need the hardware that supports that as well. I mean, I can't take, my Behringer 802 little mixer with two microphones and expect that to do multi-track recording because it's an analog output. That's all I'm going to get is one mix out. So you got to have a USB or a FireWire or some digital output from your audio recording device, mixer, whatever, and right into the computer. We'll talk about the Zoom devices later. The H6 will do that as well as have multi-track. The Rode Procaster, which we talked about in the hardware section, does multi-track recording. So you've got to be able to record multiple tracks somewhere so that, if you're recording directly to Logic Pro, you got to be able to get that into your computer in digital multi-track format.
And that is one of the biggest advantages of working with something like Audition Pro was that you have 3 to 4 people in your studio and you can control everybody's signal. And then in post, you have separate tracks for each person.
Yeah.
So that you don't have to, I will tell you one place that really did save my bacon. It was when I was interviewing some voice talent from Destiny 2, and we were all in studio together. The three of us were on one track, and our guests were on Skype. And for some weird reason, and it only happened this one time, but it happened. we had a 5-second delay between us and studio and them on Skype.
Yeah.
We would say something, wait, and they would react to it, and then they would respond to it. But because they were on their own separate channel and the guys were on their channel, all I had to do was just go through, find their isolated audio, shift it. Find their isolated audio, shift it. And it was one of the toughest things I've ever had to edit. But had it all been one channel, it had all been one signal, it would not have been used. It would have been a horror show. Fix.
Yeah.
But because we had because Logic Pro supported multi-track recording, I didn't have a problem with it. These are just some of the different what are called digital audio workstation DAWs that you can work with. And depending on your budget, you know, again, start simple. If you don't know if podcasting is for you, first thing I would say is, well, then check out Audacity.
Mm-hmm.
Try playing around with Audacity. You will hear me and Chuck say it. You do not necessarily want to sink a lot of money into hardware and software, not knowing if you like this or not. And that's what I think is important, is you got to know if you've got it in you to be a podcaster.
Yep.
So find something. And if you like Audacity and if you find out that you like Audacity, stay with Audacity. But then if you decide, well, I want to upgrade, here are just some of the options you have. And Chuck, did you have any other software packages that you could think of that would be worth mentioning at this point?
Those are the big ones. I think there's occasionally I see one called Cubase, which comes free with some of the microphones and bundles that you see together. I don't have a whole lot of experience. My sister did a number of voiceover recordings with it. You know, it's a reasonable package from what I understand. Nothing terrific, but nothing, you know, people aren't going, throw that CD away. Or, you know.
Right. And there's the toughest part about, I think, about any sort of digital audio, that when you have an upgrade, the trick is, okay, well then, you know, does the upgrade work with my, does the widget with my new operating system? Sometimes it will, sometimes it won't. When I say goodbye to this computer, and this Mac on the other side of my studio, when it finally gives up the ghost, that will be the last time I will be with what at one time was the best friend of a podcaster. It was a piece of software called Levelator. And Levelator they've stopped developing it. They're no longer developing Levelator. It was an open source piece of software, and it was great at leveling all of the audio in your work. And it works on this operating system, but on newer computers, it's like, nope.
I've got some good news for you.
Oh, talk to me. Hudson.
Check the Apple App Store. There is a new version. It's not from the Conversations Network. Same drag and drop kind of interface, only instead of calling your files dot output, it says, what folder do you want to put them into? And they'll be suffixed with dash leveled. So Levelator exists. You can use it on Catalina and going forward. I even backtracked it and downloaded it and put it on Mojave. So yes, Levelator lives on in another incarnation. I am using it. Now, Levelator, you should understand, is a great accessory for spoken word. It takes up the low spots, brings down the high spots, and levels it all out. If you've got music somewhere in there, especially if it's fading in or fading out, don't mess with that. It's not good, because it's going to go, wow, this music's really quiet. I'm going to bring it up. And what should be a fade in or a fade out gets really janky.
With the workflow you would have with Levelator would be you put in your music either by hand, but it should not be present in the recording that you're trying to, to normalize. You really don't want to do that. Now, Freud mentions Zoom lets you save audio recordings as separate files per user. There are some issues, but it's useful for later edits. Yeah, we're gonna cover the Zoom items when we start getting into podcasting on the go, because that's something I haven't had a chance to really play with. but I but to give you some looks ahead for this podcast, the Zoom products are absolutely phenomenal.
They're fun.
And what they do, it's just incredible.
And we mentioned the Rodecaster Pro earlier as well. It does multi-track recording on board to that SD card. But remember, if you've got 8 hours of audio capacity and you're just doing single stereo track and you say, well, now we've got four people, you're going to cut that down. Your time just went in a quarter. It's like your SD card just got a lot smaller. So count on that if you are doing multi-track recording, that every track is going to require that much more N multiplier disk space.
So in closing, these are just some of the software packages that you have for audio editing. After you clean up the, and as I said earlier, each editing station, each editing software package has a different way of doing edits. The way you edit on Audacity is not the way you edit on GarageBand. And how you edit on GarageBand is not necessarily the way that you edit on Logic Pro. And I don't know, this is another little thing that I prefer in Logic Pro over editing in GarageBand. One of the things that I noticed with GarageBand, when you take one piece of audio and put it over another piece, it literally removes whatever is being, overlaid. I don't know if it's an option or not, but I know that in Logic, it actually defaults that when you overlay one on top of the other, it.
Mm-hmm.
And that again is one of the other perks of working with higher end software.
Yeah.
Is that instead of saying, okay, we're going to move this piece into this piece, and if you overlap it, I'm just going to delete whatever is being overlapped here. You actually can go into Logic Pro and an Audition. And when you put one on top of the other, you crossfade, which I've always been a big proponent of, because when you crossfade, it's really hard to see where one edit ends and another one.
Yep.
Again, it all comes, you don't have that. You definitely don't have that in Audacity.
Right.
You've got to really navigate. You really got to navigate the seas of creativity to try to make an edit sound seamless in Audacity. That's the give and take when you're starting working with pro end software versus software that you get. That is not to say you can't find pro level software that's open source. I'm just saying it's a little harder to do certain things in open source software than you can with pro end. You'll find your fit. You will find your fit. You just gotta know what options, and that's something we go into in the book. You will find what options each of these software packages have and how it's going to benefit you as a podcast. But if you have any questions for us about that, Chuck, where can they reach out to us? And
if you've got questions, you've got comments, reach out to us on our voicemail line, 703-791-1701. You can also visit our website, Podcasting for Dummies, where you'll find everything you need to know. Well, at least you'll find all these podcasts that are really wonderful. Maybe some articles, too. You can find our book anywhere you find your regular books, online, offline, that kind of thing. Join us for these streams. If you want your questions answered really fast, or addressed, entertained, or at least jotted down for a future episode, twitch.tv/TheTMonster. Or a live stream Q&A. Thank you, everybody, who has joined us this afternoon. We have been sitting in these chairs for over 4 hours recording episodes for you and loving every minute of it. Just remember, Podcasting for Dummies, the companion podcast, is protected by Creative Commons, non-commercial, no derivatives, share-alike United States 3.0 license. You can find out more about that at creativecommons.org. Until next time, for me and T. Morris, we wish you all the best. Stay safe, stay healthy, be kind to each other, and pod on.